CliffCentral.com.
All right, our leader, top leader interview. I'm Adrian Groenewald. With me, Louis Groenewald, the old man. We've got Alison Yandu and then Charles Keita, CFO of Sibanye. Our special guest today, Mr. Nhlanhla Nene. I think for the rest of your life, you'll probably be known as the former finance minister, but we call you Mr. Nene. Yeah. What exactly are you doing now? Just enlighten us.
I've got two employers. And there's a third unofficial one.
Okay.
Who actually sits at the top of it. Mrs. Nene is my first employer.
I've got to say, yeah. Yes.
In charge?
Mine too.
Yeah, but she pays me very little. And I'm resident advisor at Tebe Investment Corporation. And I'm a non-executive director at Allan Gray.
And that's what takes up your time every day, pretty much, and then family and interests and so on.
Absolutely. But all of them, I asked that I be given time to serve my third employer, my wife, and my kids. So I'm actually busy for 4 days in a week. And I have a long weekend that starts on a Friday and runs into Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for being with us today. I want to ask you, for me, one of the most important questions, and I hope you can shed some light on this. I think our opinions as South Africans, as members of society, are formed by what we read so often, the analysis and the opinions of authors and journalists and everyone else. So we need to somehow trust what's being reported. So my difficult question to you today is, because I need to know to what extent I can entrust the opinion forming of myself to those people. If you take the events that happened in December, okay, and thereafter, it was reported extensively. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, Mr. Nene, how accurate in general was the reporting, 10 being perfectly accurate? Well, I'm not going to talk detail. And 1 being useless, so off the mark, it's not even funny. Can I look at that and say, 8 out of 10, in general, it was quite accurate or not?
Indeed, a very difficult question. But I would say about 5.
So in general, an average of 5, sometimes maybe hit the mark, sometimes no. That's quite low. So in other words, a general level of accuracy of 50% of what happened in that important era in our country. Is that concerning?
Look, it is concerning because I think at times we underestimate. Earlier we spoke about institutions. We underestimate the importance of the institutions in which we serve. Because that's what I always say. I don't think it was about the individual. It was more about the institution. Mm. And of course, excuse me, I just have a bit of a cold. And of course, you cannot, you know, the institutions are made up of individuals at the end of the day. Mm. And perhaps if one happens to be at the helm of that institution, then it tends to, revolve around the individual. But at the end of the day, I think it's the institution that I think we could have handled much better. And mm-hmm. I don't think we would have had the same reaction as we did.
Because I'll tell you what my concern is. You're an opinion leader in society and will always be because of your background and everything that's happened. And then we have reporting on the relationship between the president and the current finance minister. And if that's a 50% accuracy, as a general, let's say, agreement here, then it's dangerous. You know, Alice, you have been in the reporting game. That does worry me, although I can't extrapolate that over all stories, of course. But it does worry me. And I don't know if it worries anyone else, but we draw our opinions, or we build our opinions on President Zuma, on Musi Maimane, on Julius Malema, on the CEO of Sibanye, based on what is reported. And I would hope that we can grow in our maturity of how we report these things. Alice, you've always been concerned about the maturity of reporting in our country, and you've had those conversations.
And I still am. I still am. And I think it's the biggest blind spot that the country doesn't realize in terms of what's happened in the newsrooms. But you know, that's a subject for another day.
Yeah.
But back to the 5. I think the 5 is very low, if indeed that is the accuracy level. But I think the 5 reflects perhaps one most important thing, which I think maybe the former minister would agree to. The fact that as a reporter or as an editor coming into this story, there's very little that I'm working with. Okay? What we knew is that he had been fired. What we knew is that the market reacted the way they reacted. But then, I don't want to call them the shenanigans, but yeah, the shenanigans. How do you get to the bottom of that? Unless someone who perhaps has an axe to grind comes out and say, hey, I'll volunteer this information for you. See how you corroborate it, because that's often how reporting, you know, often works. But I think until such a time when we have people who are willing to talk and are willing to have that inner voice to say, you know, this is not about the individual. This is about the institution. This is about the good of the country. The five, unfortunately, will stay with us for some time.
Okay, so Mr. Nene, and I want us to, we have these big things happen in our nation, in our lives, and we don't take the time to extract from it what we can learn so that we hopefully don't fall into the same trap. And I want us to ask you, what are the 2, 3, 4 leadership lessons, just lessons we can learn from that incident and take away into the future? Louis, quick comment, then we'll go to the former minister.
Noting what Ellis was saying, Mr. Nene, this rating of 5, of course, it's a subjective one. But obviously, we in the leadership development field, so a lot of this material and this kind of conversation is used by leaders to understand and grow. It's all about, we believe that leaders can't become good leaders without the ability to work through opposition and challenge all the time. This is what makes character as well. In your case, some of this must have been hurtful as well to you individually. Your feelings on that, it was hurtful, and how did you manage that?
Well, I think hurtful is too strong a word. You know, when I sent my wife the message, I said to her, there's going to be an announcement about me. It's nothing to worry about. It's just like my appointment.
Which was how? So it's cost her mind back.
I'm now trying to work so that, you know, when she gets in and sees the announcement, she knows that she must remember that there was a day when there was an announcement again, which was almost similar to what is happening. It's just that the other one is, you know, the opposite of the other. So it was not necessarily hurtful, but it was something that says, oh, you know, we've reached that point. Because I always joked to my colleagues that the appointment of a minister, and people would say it's a 5-year contract, I always say it's a 24-hour contract, actually. And I used to say it's easier to get rid of the minister than to get rid of a government official, because your appointment is by announcement and so is your dismissal.
President can decide.
Absolutely.
I just want to mention,
so serving let me just complete this one. Yeah. So serving at the pleasure of someone means that you should also, your expectations, you must, you know, tone down your expectations. Don't think you have an unlimited, you know.
Good point. No,
but
I see that.
That is the leadership principle coming through.
Totally.
Otherwise, you not build on your ego.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You build on the realities of position, that really you're there at the pleasure of somebody. And this is the important principle to understand. If you don't have that flexibility, the resilience, then be careful of being in leadership positions, because that's part of your character. Else you take it personally, you take offense unnecessary, and then everybody becomes your enemy.
But Mr. Nene, what can we take away? Let's take some leadership lessons, then we'll take a question from the floor. Let's run through some things that we can learn from this.
Well, the fact of the matter is, when you are given a job to do, you must always know that there is no tomorrow. You give it your all today, because, you know, a good thing is when you leave office. I didn't have much to go and say, I need to tie up these loose ends, you know, because I had actually done everything up to the last point, you know. Unfortunately, it was on a very good day. We had just concluded the last cabinet of the year, which I had to table the following year's budget. And I was very comfortable when I saw that that's precisely what cabinet had adopted, and that's what carried through. So making sure that you actually give it your all, and you must know that you might not have the tomorrow. You know, I went into a bathroom at the airport, and the guy said to me, welcome to my palace. And I said, goodness me, this is a guy who values what he does. You know, he treats this as his palace. And I think, you know, whenever you're given a task, you must, give it your all. And that's what I still believe I did, and I look back with no regrets.
And society seems to also for lack of a better, buy that. They accept that. The feeling I get is there's a positive vibe around how the former minister served. I think there's broader things we can learn. The power of social media, how a whole nation just rose up and shared their views and thoughts, and who knows what was accurate and not. Leadership decisions are more visible than ever before. A leader can't just make a decision necessarily. We think they're accountable from election to election. They're now accountable in between to the nation because we have a voice. People have a voice to share.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things. Leaders are accountable all the time, not just, just say that. So there's a lot of additional broader elements that I think we can take away from it. And gentlemen, you can jump in. Let's just get the question from the floor and we can sort of work it in.
I must say the reaction was also quite overwhelming. I did not expect that. I don't think anybody did. The way, you know, the entire reaction was completely overwhelming and to a great extent humbling. And as I said, I always say it wasn't about the individual, it was about the institution.
But it also indicated a high level of trust in you as a leader as well. That's part of the reaction, not so.
Well, a level of trust in me as part of the collective.
And the institution.
Yeah.
All right, question from the floor. Introduce yourself, quickly ask that question.
Yes, my name is David Magwe from Sabanya Gold. I have a question to the former minister. My question is, or in a sense, I'm a former trade union leader myself, from the business of politics, obviously. And I want to ask one question. How did the minister manage this transformation from making a decision as a business person currently, from the decisions that you were making then as you are a leader of a political organization, knowing that from politics point of view, the line between right and wrong is quite blurred or partially not very much clear. How do you manage the transformation from an individual point of view? I hope you understand my question.
Okay, so for anyone who didn't get, if I understand correctly, there's a transformation here, decisions you made as a leader in the political realm and now in the business environment. How did you manage that transformation? Is that how the question comes over? Okay.
It's a very interesting transition and very interesting space to be in. But, you know, my life has a tendency, everything I do in life has a tendency of catching up with you. When I was in Parliament, there's legislation that we passed, which had to do with holding the executive accountable, which caught up with me when I got into government. And here is an opportunity again having been in the public space, now being in the private space, beginning to find, you know, the symbiotic relationship we've always spoken about. What exactly does one do now that you're in the private space? So I think it's an interesting space to be in, and I'm learning, and I want to learn as fast as possible also to be able to deal with that. But finding the right interface between the public and the private sector, because the two need each other, it's for that reason that I believe in this symbiotic relationship. I'm not sure whether you would then call it corporate capture, because when it's the corporate, you know, there's a state capture. But here I am having to drive corporate capture.
You have now broken away from politics as such, hey? I mean, if I can put it that way, you really have jumped. Or are you still kind of connected?
Not really. I mean, there's... there's some things that you actually can't do away with. You know, my life is, I'm an active member of the organization. I participate in the campaign as it were. But most of my time is actually taken by my day job. So politics has become my part-time with my day job that puts food on the table, being where I should actually dedicate most of my time.
Okay. Alice, you always have questions.
I do have a question. One thing to reflect upon, though, is that I mentioned that the minister had presented his medium-term budget. And for the first time in the history of this country, we had a minister being disrupted from giving his budget speech. And this was the man. For 40 minutes, he couldn't give his speech. So I'm just wondering that when December 8 or 9 came and you looked back at that sort of experience, did you think, wow, I can actually look forward to another life?
That has another interesting phase in my life. You know, standing there were questions in my in my mind at the tabling of the medium-term budget policy statement. Should I proceed or should I not? And I was very clear that we do need to proceed, because if there is anything that would produce a solution to the crisis that is out there, it is us tabling this medium-term budget policy statement, on the basis of which we should engage as a nation as to how then do we deal with this immediate challenge that has arisen and there's the noise out there. Because if you don't do that, you would have deprived the nation of an opportunity of engaging with government's plans in addressing this challenge. Of course, when you crafted the MTBPS, this challenge was not on the table. When I came to Parliament, the chair of the who was going to be presiding called us, because they were sitting with these letters to say that, look, we have a crisis. There are these letters and there might be disruptions. And I said, okay, that's fine. If only I could get a minute on the podium to table the documents. The speech is something else. You may not deliver the speech. As long as I'm given an opportunity, and you will realize that that's precisely what I did. It's only after I had said, I hereby table these documents, the medium-term budget policy statement, the adjustment estimates, the adjusted division of revenue, all of the documents that go with it had been tabled. So even if I couldn't have completed the speech, those had been tabled to allow the nation, parliament, and all the relevant structures to engage with it. So I said to her, if I could only get that.
The government is not stopped. This is, I love the discernment between priorities here. This is very important as a leader.
So I looked back and I said, you know, this is something also that you actually don't get somebody to advise you to do that. Because when you're called to the side there and you're told this is what's going to happen, you actually have, you know, that's when you actually have to think on your feet and say, this is what should happen. It's in the interest of the nation.
Just a quick question, though. Someone with your skills, you had been at the Treasury as a deputy and so forth. How else are you able to still impart your knowledge to capacitate government in any way? Because, again, a leadership deficit is something we're confronted with on a daily basis.
Look, I always say, given an opportunity, I will do what I can. Twice now, there are leadership courses that are run by Professor Alan Hesh at University of Cape Town. I've done two sessions with students. The other set of students who are on their MPhil leadership program are actually government, most of them are government senior officials. And I found it very interesting because it's also an interactive session. You know, you deliver your paper, but you then exchange. We have a very open conversation with these students who are also senior officials in government, and it's interesting to see how many of them actually are having a keen interest in, you know, the kind of leadership that they think the country deserves. And I think we owe it to the next generation to actually play our part and be able to add our contribution to what is happening. So given an opportunity, as part of a broader collective, I'm quite happy to continue engaging, and I've done a number of other sessions.
And that's what you're doing here today, by the way. This is a leadership masterclass. Shol, you know what? I'm sitting here thinking spontaneously. You're the CFO of, in South Africa, probably one of, if not the largest mining company at the moment. Definitely one of the biggest employers of employees. And you're happens to be a finance guy with a former finance man. Any question you have for him?
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting here thinking when Mr. Nene explained that, you know, you are there at the call of the president and you must do what you can every day. The problem I struggle with is, how do you marry implementing a strategy if you've got a 24-hour contract? You know, it's not that you can... I cannot say to Mr. Nene, grow the economy, and he can't do that in a day. So how do you marry that notion of being there on a 24-hour contract versus implementing a strategy and making sure that we grow the economy? Isn't it a bit unfair then? Because I think then there's a battle between self-interest and the greater good. And how do you marry those two? And I think that's what I would like to know.
Again, I think the institution becomes critical, because you do not act in you're not acting alone, you're acting as an institution. And it's important that whatever decision is arrived at, you know, people always raise issues about the Treasury being, you know, as if it's a homogeneous, you know, entity where people would wake up every morning and they are single-minded, they will do one thing. The debates that ensue are the debates that actually make that institution a strong institution. And from time to time, whenever there is a challenge, it's a matter of actually, at times you actually just have to identify a few people, bring them into your office and start up a debate on something where you are looking for a solution as soon as yesterday. It's not like you're getting a certain level of leadership. You just bring in people that you think if you bring so-and-so, he brings a fresh perspective to issues. I would want so-and-so to be part of this discussion. And you sit there, you have that latitude. And as such, you would find that leadership also just, you know, rising to the occasion from time to time. So I would imagine driving a strategy is not an issue for one person. It's something that the institution itself should actually, you know, buy into and, you know, drive it with the energy, the vigor, and the integrity, of course, as an important element.
Okay, so Louis, final comment, and then Mr. Nene, I'm going to ask you to give a message to leaders. Suppose there are thousands of leaders out there, and especially the youth of our country. Just any message you have for them, of any nature, you can share with us in the final moments of the show.
Charles, in terms of the 24-hour issue, the way I understand what he's saying to us, which is a solid leadership principle, that you can't rely on tomorrow happening in your position. So what you must do today, the best you can, so that you can have an open conscious, a clean conscious. The strategy obviously is vital. The organization must run with that. You can't do that in 24 hours, but you can have a clean conscious that you've done the best with it. It's a very good attitude. You know, it does postpone the things you can do today, I think.
All right, a message to the nation. This will go out on social media and in various ways, Mr. Nene. I'm sure you've had many interviews, but this is the leadership context. And anything you want to say out there?
I actually haven't had too many interviews. I try and avoid interviews as much as possible because they tend to be about me.
But I thought you haven't been on a lot. But
no, I've tried very hard, and I think I've succeeded not to have too many. This is a very difficult one because, you know, you need to be an authority in something in order to be able to give a message. But I would want to believe that we are all leaders in our own right. And there is one thing that I've always thought helps, you know, every human being must be anchored somehow. Mm. Your faith, your community, and your the people you serve should actually be a mirror of what it is that you would want to achieve. So it's not so much about how much you can make or can amass to yourself. I think it's about your contribution, I mean, all the time. And that actually gives you peace of mind. That's where you get the best fulfillment. It's for that reason that I always say, going back to my wife's, employment, she runs a small farming operation.
Okay.
She's never paid me. But I'm so fulfilled every time I come back from there. Because you're working with real issues. You would want to see the 10,000 cabbages you've planted being harvested, looking good. This is what you've put into it. And it's not about the money that will come out of it. But the biggest satisfaction comes out of that fulfillment and the accomplishment of your efforts.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nhlanhla Nene, former Minister of Finance. Now, we're going to end off with a Sibanye executive leadership thought. I want to share this with you, and then if you have a final thought there, Shal, that's how we end off our show. Here's an interesting concept, and I don't know who said this anyway. No matter how educated, talented, rich, or cool you believe you are, how you treat people tells all. Integrity is everything. And I added to this tweet, and the tweet's gone everywhere. Do what I say I'm going to do. Be on time or communicate when I won't be. Treat others as I want to be treated. And that's a sort of an integrity message. Shal, Sibanye, executive thought, anything?
Yes, Adrian, and this is a quote by Potter Stewart where he says, and he speaks about ethics, but ethics and integrity goes hand in hand. And he says, ethics is knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what is the right thing to do.
Well.
And I think that is the power in the message.
Nice one. Thank you, folks, for joining us this Leadership Masterclass, and Mr. Nhlanhla Nene especially. And next up is our Business Masterclass, using joint ventures, alliances, and partnerships to help you grow. And Richard Angus is going to take you through that. Stay with us.
Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Cliff Central.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.